and welcome to the Bookends Cafe, a podcast for listeners who have a professional role, but obviously a curious and interesting mindset. We're a podcast for listeners that have a serious job, but whose people have a willingness to hear the opinions of others and make positive change to their life and the life and in that life because of those opinions. Our names are Kelly and
Judith.
Hello. And together we are
Bookends Leadership.
A small but effective boutique coaching and mentoring business for individuals and teams who are either stuck or who are otherwise needing an injection of new thinking to achieve their business or personal goals. For your pleasure, we bring to you our podcast, The Bookends Cafe, every Monday onto iTunes or onto our website. We work with a theme to discuss books, online material, theory and in practice, and we leave you with takeaways and stories in which you can take or leave. But first, we always start with the recipe.
Now, normally I would produce a wonderful thing for you to eat, but I haven't had time today. But I'm just going to tell you a little story.
Okay.
About something that I bet you don't eat enough of and you should.
Brussels sprouts.
No. Oh, apart from my Brussels sprouts.
Ugh.
My next big thing, beetroot.
I like beetroot.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that.
Beetroot.
Now, do you cook beetroot or do you buy a tin?
Absolutely.
You buy a tin.
You know me.
Well, I'm sorry. You're going to have to go buy it. Because there
buy beetroot.
Buy beetroot.
Do you actually buy beetroots?
Do you know where
do they exist in shops?
They grow.
Oh.
Yes, it's a vegetable.
In the dirt?
Yes, they do. Then you peel it and you boil. All you do is stick it in a sauce and a
pot. But do you remember with beetroot all over your hands and all over your...
Well, it depends.
I remember eating mulberries as kids. It was like a murder scene. There was stuff everywhere.
You do it carefully. But can I say, there's so many wonderful recipes for beetroot. There's beetroot salads, there's beetroot soup, there's beetroot in things.
Yeah.
There's actually a chocolate cake that you use beetroot rather than other sort of purchased synthetic things. So just don't underestimate the simple beetroot. But your job, your challenge, one of your goals.
If I choose to accept it.
If you choose to accept it, is that you will cook something with beetroot from its natural source, from the normal natural source. And you will feed that to your children.
I didn't throw it at my head.
No, no, don't tell them there's not beetroot in it. That's the trick. I don't tell my husband.
It's a colour.
My husband doesn't eat beetroot, but I put it in things he doesn't know. So there you go.
Jerry, if you're listening right now, your wife is poisoning you whilst you eat.
That's the challenge for today, the beetroot approach. So there, listeners, go and buy some beetroot.
I think we have the new name for this podcast, the beetroot approach.
The beetroot.
Maybe.
Well, we've got a much more interesting approach than beetroot, although I am a great fan of beetroot. We are going to talk about
interviews and all that jazz.
Yes. And this is, I have to say, this is one of my favourite topics because I've been doing this for a long, long time, interviewing people, and I get so... It's almost road rage. I get interview rage when I see people making some fundamental errors that are easily fixed. So, but we need to take a step back. So we've got an interview, but in order to get that interview, we had to present something to an employer, a prospective employer, a CV, a letter, a cover letter, whatever. So, Kelly, what do you – I know you've done a little bit of work in this area in CVs. What do you recommend in the CV department?
In the CV department, I recommend three things. The first thing is remember that a CV is obviously something that you submit, and I've got a template that I'll run through everybody with next that I think is very modern and very interesting. So that's the first part, having a good paper document. The second part is recognising that technology now exists that many CVs are redundant because you are actually able to, with online application, populate your CV via LinkedIn. So there's a second part about having a CV. It's that your CV can be circumvented altogether. So you have the best document in the world, but an online application doesn't require it. It requires a pre-populated software system, which is obviously in different headings to your own CV and all choppy and changey, or it's directly pre-populated through LinkedIn. And thirdly, recruiters and people that are receiving CVs should be able to have had a picture painted of you before the CV even reaches their desk. So they will either make informed decisions about you by being as crafty as getting on Instagram or Facebook or in LinkedIn, finding out who your shared network might be, giving that person a call or giving that person a quick LinkedIn message to find out what your true self is actually like. So that's my three, and I think whilst people need to apply for interviews and be ready with and to be CV ready, please don't feel as though that your CV is the only way in which recruiters are going to be looking at you or accessing you. So that's why I think job seeking takes three times more time than what it used to, because the days of just sending through a CV for interview readiness are just all done. So the CV template that I'll put on show notes as something that you might like to use for your own CV has got a couple of features. The maximum length of your CV, people try and always say, look, one page, but it's impossible. But I think the maximum you should really focus on is around three pages.
Good. Yeah. So that's, you know, as someone who has been through them, I agree, three pages max. Certainly one page is impossible these days.
But a one page, or the first page, I don't know where these numbers come from. Maybe I've gotten it wrong, but recruiters look at your CV for about 7 seconds. Is it something like that? Before they flick you or before they give you a hall pass to proceed. So the first page is still got to be punchy.
Yeah.
So in this template, the top right, the only identifying information that you need to have in the header is your name, your phone number, your email address, and your LinkedIn reference. That's it.
Yeah.
Don't need to know where you went to school.
No.
Don't need to know how many children you have.
That you're married.
Don't need to know. You don't need to know whether you've got sent to Sabina.
Yeah.
Old mates. You know, like sometimes people think that the school that you went to or the uni that you went to, even your qualifications are important. They are seriously not. And remember to putting information like that in the header is a very good way for you to do it. Some organisations are moving to what they call blind CVs. So they actually want to take all of the identifying information about gender, age, actually out. So if you actually put it all in the header, it makes the recruiter just able to go into the header, press delete, and then there's a beautifully clean CV. Not that actually you shouldn't really worry about that, but I think the easier you make for your CV to be received by others, knowing that quite often organisations are going for blind CV now, makes their life a little bit easier. Anyway, the front page, the top heading, the first heading you see is your core competencies. So mine, it says risk, health, safety and environment. But I have three CVs. So I have one CV for my board appointments, one CV for my consulting and one for my sort of GM, executive sort of stuff. So those headings are quite often different for the role in which I'm applying or for the tender that I'm going for.
You need to remember that. You need to connect your capability statement or your competency statement, like that heading, to the job you're applying for.
Absolutely.
So you've got to take the most important, the most relevant, the most striking one that matches the requirements of the position as being up front. And, of course, that nice risk, health, safety and environment covers a lot of things.
Yep.
But you think of how many positions you could actually even just send that CV to cold turkey because it fits into the type of job position title that would be advertised.
Absolutely. And I think that that's something that when people are really going for rapid fire CVs, they think that one PDF CV is all they need.
Please.
I think every job needs to have a slightly tailored CV.
And it needs to appear that way. I know it sounds ridiculous, but, you know, I get really angry if I get the same even the same cover, if someone sends me a cover letter, even the same colour, you can clearly see it's got dear and then they've just added, you know, another one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, you personalise everything that you're sending in for a position, whether it's electronically or whether it's, you know, good old-fashioned paper with a letter, that you personalise it and you make that company feel like this is your original work for them.
Yeah. Again, because that makes them feel good, right?
Absolutely.
It might actually just mean you float to the top of the pile. Underneath your core competencies is your core accomplishments. So if you've got an accomplishment that relates specifically to the position description, write it in very much. It's actually a very condensed, very heavy bullet point. Not granular, but these are your high-level accomplishments. So that goes in. Then, again, bullet points, key areas of expertise, and only then do you start actually going into your roles. So you could actually have board experience as a role or general management, whatever it is you're going for. It could be advisory experience or lobbying experience or advocacy. But the way in which you write that experience, I think, has also got some little nuances. Obviously, you've got the title, what you did, the organisation, what you did when you were there. Don't say things like, you don't want to come across as a participant. You want to break down what your contribution to that activity was in a way that is actually sort of really speaking to you and your skills. So some of mine is I could write what I did or the process of how to do – sorry, I could work about the process, but I actually need to write what I did. So the first bullet point that I've got, work with the CEO to formulate a transformative business strategy that led to 1,400 new members, 50% increase in revenue and a financial surplus with growth targets. Punchy.
And that's it. And of course, remembering that to take this to an interview stage, so say, you know, Kelly's put that in and I've decided to interview her, I'm going to then want to see the evidence of this. Yeah. So I'm going to be asking her behavioural questions to demonstrate how she achieved some of these things. So if you want to make up all this, you want to sell yourself amazingly and exaggerate what you've done, just be aware
never lie.
That no interviewer is ever going to let you get away with saying you increased a business performance by 50% without asking you a behavioural question, not necessarily specifically to your CV, but a behavioural question about how you would see, you know, the role increasing the revenues for a particular company, or giving you a dummy company that's outside the business that you're applying for, just to see how you manage the questions. So absolutely, the way Kelly's written it is perfectly good and it's great and it's quick for the recruiter or the person, the manager to see. But remember, don't tell lies. You will be caught out.
And don't gild the lily too. Like, I think if you've actually achieved, you've got decisions. You can actually talk about what you achieved in the project or in the, or as I've done, I worked with the CEO to formulate.
Yes,
I didn't do it.
No.
I worked with him.
Yes, recognising that there is a team, there is a partnership. It could be the board even, you know, under the direction of a board, you initiated something or you commenced something and with the CEO and team it was then operationalised. Yes, so absolutely accurate in your description is important.
Yep. And then obviously you go through each of your professional experiences, and Judith, I might lean on you as to when that stops, seeing as though you're older than me. Do you need to know when you – I think you stop listing your past jobs at the point when they become irrelevant.
Well, exactly. It's got to be relevant to the job. Now, if that means that they're – like me, I mean, I've got a 45 or 50 history or something.
1,000 years.
I'm not going to give you the jobs back, say, 25 years ago because they're not relevant. But I'm going to stop at the point where I can connect the experience to the position description of the job I'm applying for. Now, that may be, if you have less experience, it might only be 2 jobs, right? But you can then do a short paragraph to say, you know, previous employment covered different areas, and you could some dot points in different areas.
Yeah.
Leave it at that. They will ask you if they need to. But don't just end it there without an explanation, because they're going to think, well, you haven't worked for like 10 years or you've disappeared and what's happened.
I think it's the best way to also cover when you've had gaps in your CV.
Yes.
If you've had gaps to have babies or if you've had gaps to try and look after your elderly parents.
Or whatever.
Just be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Just
say.
Time, you know, period out.
Find
to,
a way to say it.
But get that paragraph right, but put it in.
Yeah.
It's just to make them see that you are already thinking professionally. And behaving as a professional who would work well with their particular ethos in their company.
Yep, yep. And after you've actually done all that professional work, there's only then tertiary education, professional development and professional memberships.
Yeah. And don't put referees.
No.
Please, I still find some people put referees. You don't need to mention, you don't even have to put referees can be submitted when, no, don't put anything, just leave it out.
Yeah.
And that's good, I mean, because that will get you down to your 3 pages maximum.
Yep.
And it's all relevant information. So you've submitted that and you've got this interview and you need to prepare for an interview. It amazes me, even to this day, the number of people that I've interviewed in the last probably 2 years who look at the interview and say, when I talk about the website for the company or talk about, you know, the company story, that they haven't checked it out.
Really?
I just can't believe that in this day and age. I mean, you know, your whole millennial generation, you are also technologically gifted, that really it's easy for you. So please, first message, preparation really important about the company, not just about the job, and make sure that you keep that in your mind. Obviously, you might forget a few things, that's okay, but you can show them that you are aware of what the company does. The way you communicate, obviously we're nervous, right? That's typical of any interview, but you've got to think in your preparation, what sort of interview am I going to have? It could be a challenge interview where you're actually given a task and you have to complete it. It could be simply the normal standard questions. So you have a panel and you have questions. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, you should have actually in the preparation been advised of who will be on that panel. Yeah. If you haven't received that information, it is perfectly okay to ask.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't worry. Just ring them up and ask them who would be on this panel. They could set you, or they could give you the questions in advance and then you go in and answer them. That is, I think, the hardest, right?
Yeah.
That is a really tough interview because you get this list of questions and you write everything. I mean, you know, whereas in an interview you would have maybe 5-10 minutes on one question. When you prepare, when you've been given the questions, you end up writing a novel on each one. And so what happens is you don't get through it and you don't give them the important answer. You give them the start of your speech. So really, if you get that situation, be very careful how you prepare and what sort of things. Make sure you write down your top three bullet points that you must state for each of the questions. That's it.
Yeah.
Just top three and make sure you say them.
Yes.
The other type of interview.
And if you can't say them, ask for some time to be able to get yourself on point to say
them. Yes, exactly.
Because you're nervous, right?
Exactly. But remember, the panel is expecting, because they've given you the questions in advance, that you are also able to show them time management, that you are also able to show them that you have an hour's interview and that you've got five very big questions, that you know how to manage your own time, right? They won't ask you questions till they'll give you a chance to speak and then they'll ask questions. So they've timed it.
Yeah.
So you have to show that you're able to manage it. So you do have to be careful. If you hear yourself starting to waffle, stop.
Yeah.
Because that means you've blown it. You've done your three, move on.
Or if their non-verbal start to change,
yes.
you might not feel you're waffling, but
I think breathe, you are. Read the non-verbals. Very important to read the non-verbals. Body language. As we said, read the non-verbals of the panel, but remember your body language is giving out signs as well.
Yeah.
I had a candidate for a senior position and she never, ever had eye contact with me.
Really?
Never in the entire interview. She had eye contact with the other three members of the panel.
Wow.
Never looked at me.
Did you have a bag on your hair or anything?
Well, I wondered if I had a bag on my hair now. I even got my watch and I'm trying to look up my nose. But, you know, now that simple thing meant that my evaluation of her was very different to the others. So, I mean, we didn't mean she didn't necessarily not get the job, but that is a major faux pas.
Yeah.
Whoever is speaking, you eyeball them.
Yeah.
You have eye contact.
Yeah.
When you have eye contact, you use your body language, you use your head to show I'm looking at you, but that I'm also listening to you, right? Because if you just look at someone, that could tell them anything. It could tell them you're absolutely bored off the planet.
Yep.
But you use body language, slightly tilts the head, I'm listening to everything you're telling me and then I'm going to respond.
And it's worthwhile actually sort of getting to know your interviewee's name.
Yes.
LinkedIn's so transparent. You can actually ask who the people are. Find out what they look on LinkedIn.
So you know
who they are.
Yeah,
so you actually, because when you're in an interview, it's hard enough. You're trying to get a job.
Yeah.
If you remember people's name, you go, oh, Linda, she's the one with the dark hair. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Barry, that's the one. Yeah.
So all of that is all part of your preparation, really important part of your preparation.
And it's often interesting because the Barrys and the Lindas of the world sometimes see that you've been looking up.
So they
might think that helps the preparation.
Yes.
Because they've been scoping you
out. Well, in the olden days, when I used to apply for positions.
In 1922.
The great advantage you got was if you had made a phone call. Yeah, I still advocated, I'm sorry, I'm old-fashioned, but if there's a job ad and it's got, you know, inquiries, please phone, I still phone up. I have one or two questions because you know what? All these years, I can tell you in all these interviews, recruiters remember the names of every person who phoned them. So I can be sitting there with a pile of applicants and we're looking at it and we get to Fred Bloggs and someone will say, oh, yeah, you rang me.
Yeah.
Nicely spoken. You know, you've got branding points ready. Anyway,
2 minutes.
You don't have to, but all I'm saying in my history, that's what we did. But the only other thing I want to say as well in an interview, a couple of don'ts. You don't flatter a panel member. Please, I had one interview where the candidate spent the whole time telling this particular person on the panel how wonderful they were. She'd read every article she'd ever written. She'd published, blah, 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 blah. I'm honestly, truly, we all sat there and put our heads on the desk and decided we could have gone home.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. They're there for a reason. They're there for you to be interviewed, not for you to be flattering them. So don't flatter a panel member. Don't criticise a current or a previous employer in any way, shape or form.
Yep.
It is not deemed to be professional.
Yep.
It's breaching basically the confidentiality that you have with your current or previous employer, and you don't know who's on the panel and you don't know whether they might have worked there.
Yep.
So don't do it. Don't tell your life story. Nobody wants to know. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. You're there for your professional expertise, what you're showing us that fits the position that we want. Yes, you can tell the bits that show the social side. In other words, how your values match mm-hmm. the company. But we do not want your life story.
Yeah.
It's not appropriate. Don't talk in the first person. I sat in an interview. I did an interview for a company. And this is gospel truth, and I'm not proud of it. But I sat there and I counted how many times this gentleman said I.
Really?
97 times in this interview he said I.
Wow.
I did, I went, I did, I made, I won, I did, I increased.
Right.
It was all I. Now we know you're trying to sell yourself, but you have never done anything on your own.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My team and I
yes.
did this.
Yes.
That way you've yes. included other people, but you're showing God.
Or we.
That's right. We did this, but my part in it,
yeah.
so we did this,
yes.
but my part included this. So you can bring in the I, but you start off with the we.
It's an amazingly powerful narrative.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing is, you know, your only question should not be about money.
Yeah.
You should always have a question or two,
yeah.
but it should not be, you know, as soon as they say, do you have anything you'd like to ask us, you don't go straight into money. It's, yes, you can ask about money, that's not an issue, but do at least show some interest in the position.
Yeah.
Have a question about logistics or operational
yeah.
sequences or whatever, and then move into money. Most panels will actually, it will come up from them
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah.
But don't do that as a no. So they're my absolute don'ts. I know it sounds terrible, but you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
As long as you're prepared, as long as you've done your homework, sit outside the interview before you
yeah.
go in, having been to the bathroom, having made sure you
yeah.
feel that you look great, sit there and think, I am here because I can do this job.
Yeah.
I am here. Because I can do this job.
Yep.
All I have to do is tell them how I'm going to do it.
Mm.
Go in with that thought and go and do it. And honestly, truly, there are interviews I can seriously say I absolutely enjoyed.
Yep.
I went in there nervous but still with that confident thought and I absolutely blitzed it and I loved every minute of it.
And I think that's a really nice way to wrap up this podcast because they should be enjoyable.
Yeah.
But if for whatever reason you feel as though you have missed the mark or you do miss the mark and you don't get green light
yeah.
to proceed, just stay classy.
Exactly. And you can ask
follow
for feedback.
Up and say, look,
yeah.
I enjoyed it. Thank
yeah.
you for the opportunity.
Yeah.
There's no point ripping into somebody because you didn't pass the interview or because you felt as though the job was yours and just stay classy.
Exactly.
Thank you, Judith. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Hope you all enjoyed it.
Bye.
See you next week.